You're listening to an African Elements top news story for June 17, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. Why a rare Congo Ebola outbreak has Africa CDC alarmed? Kinshasa has sounded a loud alarm. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention delivered a grave message to continental leaders. The escalating Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo is spreading fast. It is on a path to become one of the most severe epidemics in regional history. Dr. Jean Kaseya warned that the crisis could soon match the devastation of the 2014 to 2016 West African disaster if immediate action is not taken. The World Health Organization has officially declared the situation a public health emergency of international concern. This crisis did not emerge from a vacuum. It represents a deeper structural challenge that African nations face daily. The historical struggles of the region highlight how health security is tied to resource distribution. To understand the current panic, one must look closely at how the virus spreads. The epidemic was officially confirmed on May 15, 2026, in the Ituri province of the Northeastern Democratic Republic of the Congo. By mid-June, cases jumped to over 837, with nearly 200 deaths across the DRC and neighboring Uganda. Health teams find themselves fighting an uphill battle against a pathogen that has been historically ignored. The story of Ebola begins in August 1976 in Yambuku, a remote village in northern Zaire, which is now the DRC. A highly lethal hemorrhagic disease struck patients visiting the Yambuku Catholic Mission Hospital. The hospital operated with very few resources. Due to extreme poverty, the facility had only 5 syringes. Staff members routinely washed and reused these needles across dozens of patients. This practice served as the primary vector for the rapid spread of the mysterious virus. Before these foreign interventions, the continent enjoyed a rich sovereign history that relied on indigenous healing and deep communal networks. However, colonial medicine changed the landscape. During the 1976 crisis, Belgian microbiologist Dr. Peter Piot and Congolese epidemiologist Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe investigated the area. They collected blood samples and shipped them to Belgium inside a blue thermos. Scientists isolated the string-like filovirus and named it Ebola after a nearby river to avoid stigmatizing the village. That initial outbreak ended with 318 cases and 280 deaths, yielding an 88% case fatality rate. Health officials often refer to Ebola as a single entity, but the virus actually belongs to a diverse genus. The genus Orthoebolavirus contains several distinct species, each with unique genetic structures. The Zaire strain is historically the most famous and highly lethal, driving major epidemics in West Africa. However, the current 2026 outbreak is caused by a different pathogen known as the Bundibugyo strain. This strain was first identified in late 2007 in the Bundibugyo district of western Uganda. The Bundibugyo strain has historically appeared only twice before this current crisis. The first occurrence in 2007 caused 149 cases and 37 deaths in Uganda. The second outbreak emerged in the Oriental province of the DRC in 2012, resulting in 62 cases and 34 deaths. Because the strain is rare, global pharmaceutical companies did not invest in targeted medical solutions. The highly successful Ervbo vaccine, which protects against the Zaire strain, offers no protection against the Bundibugyo strain. This reality has left local doctors with a critical therapeutic vacuum. The epicenter of the current outbreak is the Mongwalu Health Zone in Ituri Province. This region presents severe challenges for medical teams due to local industrial activities. The presence of massive, unregulated artisanal gold mines draws a highly dense population of migrant workers. These laborers move constantly, traveling across porous borders to find work. This rapid human movement serves as a major vector, transporting the virus directly into major cities like Kampala, Uganda. Furthermore, armed conflict severely limits medical access to the region. Local rebel militias, such as CODECO and M23, control many gold mines at gunpoint. These armed groups impose illegal taxes on miners to fund their violent operations. Sadly, up to 98% of artisanal gold is smuggled out of the country through neighboring nations. These activities represent a history of unbalanced economic extractions that leave local health systems starved of critical public funds. The national government is stripped of the tax revenue needed to build hospitals, buy ambulances, or secure clean water. Local communities often express deep suspicion toward foreign-led medical facilities. This resistance is not random, thus. It is historically rooted in colonial-era medical abuses. During the colonial period, European administrations conducted forced and painful drug testing on African populations. French campaigns and scientists like Robert Koch utilized toxic chemicals like atoxyl on patients, causing widespread blindness and agony. These coercive campaigns created a lasting legacy of fear and medical trauma. Modern controversies have only deepened this trust deficit. In 1996, Pfizer conducted unapproved antibiotic trials on children in Nigeria during a meningitis outbreak. During the 2014 Ebola crisis, Western agencies collected blood samples without proper consent, prompting fears of exploitation. Additionally, foreign health teams often ignore local customs by banning traditional, hands-on burial practices. To survive, communities rely on their own generational survival strategies, turning to traditional herbalists rather than entering clinical quarantine centers. To challenge this historical dependency, African nations established their own defense systems. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was born out of the failures of the 2014 to 2016 West African Ebola epidemic. During that crisis, the international response was slow, uncoordinated, and highly paternalistic. In response, the African Union fast-tracked the creation of a unified health agency, which officially launched in January 2017. The organization aims to build local rapid response capacity and share epidemiological data across borders. The agency is currently leading the response against the Bundibugyo strain. On June 5, 2026, the Africa CDC, alongside the WHO, launched a $518 million continental response plan. They are actively working to build regional health resilience. This movement represents a broader effort of reforming institutional models to ensure African scientific independence. To prevent economic harm, the agency published strict guidance on June 8, 2026, advising nations against enacting blanket travel restrictions, advocating instead for targeted border screenings. Due to the lack of pre-approved vaccines, health organizations are launching emergency trials in the field. They are prioritizing candidate therapeutics to fight the Bundibugyo strain. Scientists are focusing on MBP-134, a two-antibody cocktail designed to target non-overlapping epitopes on the virus. In animal models, this experimental tool demonstrated protective qualities against several major strains. Clinical teams are also utilizing REGN-3479 to treat active infections and obeldesivir as an oral antiviral for post-exposure protection. To support these efforts, the United States government announced a $50 million grant to the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. However, conducting clinical trials during a severe crisis raises difficult ethical questions. Historically, drug-naive populations with limited access to standard healthcare have been vulnerable to exploitation. Bioethicists argue that trials must be co-designed with local communities. Most importantly, developers must promise to supply the final, approved treatments to these communities at an affordable price. The ongoing crisis in the DRC is a stark reminder of global health disparities. Global health equity demands the fair distribution of resources, power, and medical solutions. Currently, the system remains deeply unbalanced. When the Zaire strain threatened international borders, wealthy nations invested billions of dollars to build effective treatments. Yet, when a rare strain like Bundibugyo ravages vulnerable African communities, the global response slows down significantly, forcing local doctors to start clinical research from scratch. To dismantle these vulnerabilities, global health governance must be systematically decolonized. Regional entities like the Africa CDC must retain control over funding, research agendas, and crisis management. The lessons of Yambuku and the West African epidemic show that external aid is not enough. True security requires building self-reliant, well-funded domestic health infrastructures. As the Africa CDC and WHO work to secure the remaining funds for their emergency plan, the window to prevent a catastrophic humanitarian crisis is rapidly closing. Copyright African Elements.